continuing our look at introverts and extroverts a little bit. Mostly introverts. If you missed last week, as always, I encourage you to go to the website, PastorTimothyTrudy.com, and you can listen to the past recordings, listen to what you missed, and the class notes and the handouts are there as well. And for those of you that were here, I hope you've been taking advantage of what we've made available as far as the assessments the last couple weeks. At the very beginning of this session a couple weeks ago, I asked if you were an introvert or an extrovert. And then we went through some self-assessment. So I'm going to ask you again. How many of you are introverts? How many of you scored? More than 50 on the... How many of you are extroverts? Okay. How many of you introverts, you're above 60 on the assessment? Above 70? Above 80? Above 90? Are you 100? 94. Okay. So if Jean doesn't talk to you like a lot, then you know. How many of you, what was the lowest score anybody got on that? How many was below 40? Extroverts didn't even take it. They're like, I don't know. Okay. All right. We did an assessment. You can go back and look at it. We also, last week, Trudy took you through a few more assessments. We did the Myers-Briggs indicator. Different things. How many of you are sensing or intuition? How many of you were sensing? Intuition. Do you remember? Okay. All right. You got to go through these things. They help you out. All right. It also did thinking and feeling. How many were on the thinking side? How many were more feeling? You got your feelers. Okay. How many judging? How many were judging? You judgy people. I'm one of you. All right. Perceiving. More perceiving. Okay. What am I? I am a ISTJ. Okay. Duty fulfiller. Okay. You and me? Right there. Okay. Then last of all, we did four tendencies. How many upholders do I have here? Upholders. Obligers. Yeah. You're testing my memory. Questioners. How many rebels do I have? I want to pick you guys. Oh, all right. I'm an obliging questioner somewhere in there between the rebels. I'm not raising my hand. I'm not even doing your stinking test. That's what it was. Yeah. That was four tendencies. We did five love languages. How many of your love languages, your primary love languages, words of affirmation? Okay. We see you. We like you. Okay. How many of you, it's quality time? Quality time. Okay. We'll spend some time with these people and just kind of, giving and receiving gifts. Nobody? Well, you can't. Yeah. Thinks in the questions. All right. Could be. Acts of service. How many of your primary love language? Acts of service. Okay. Do things for these people. Okay. They'll do things for you because that's their love language. Physical touch. How many guys physical touch? It's a thing. All right. Okay, if you weren't here or you weren't paying attention last week, Trudy said something very important about all of this. These tools that we went through last week and we're going to go through one more today, these tools are not for self-focus and they're not for self-criticism. They're for self-awareness. They are so that for the purpose of understanding ourselves, how we respond to others and how others see us. A lot of times we don't keep in mind all of these things and how we're presenting ourselves to other people. And that really affects our relationship. And it's really a response to the command we have here in your notes in Galatians 6. Make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you have been given, and then sink yourself into that. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. Each of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life. We know that God created us to be in relationship with Himself. I mean, here's some basic theology. God created us. His purpose is that we have a relationship with Him. That's what that little diagram is all about. So we have a connection with God. But we willfully break that connection through sin. And that brokenness that sin brings permeates every relationship. It permeates every interaction we have, every choice that we make, every relationship. But God has provided restoration for that relationship with Him through the cross. And it's through the cross that we find restoration, we find wholeness, both with ourselves and God and ourselves and others. Colossians 1 says, "For God in all His fullness was pleased to live in Christ, and through Him God reconciled everything to Himself. He made peace with everything in heaven and on earth by means of Christ's blood on the cross." Most, if not everything we usually teach in here and that you hear in the service, most everything is responding to that brokenness that sin brings. And even after we have a relationship with God and He has restored relationship, we always fight that old sin nature. And so a lot of what we learn in here is responding to the brokenness of our sin and rediscovering how the cross changes everything. These assessments that we went through do none of that. All right. These assessments will not restore any kind of relationship for you. They will not fix any kind of brokenness. Knowing your love language or Myers-Briggs won't fix anything. Neither are they an excuse for our bad choices that we make because we sin. In fact, unless you're trusting the work of the cross in your life, unless you're not leaning into your own understanding, but relying on Him and trusting Him in all your ways, acknowledging Him, unless you're doing that as the scripture commands us, then all of these kind of assessments end up being foolishness. But one of the reasons I was excited to be able to give you these tools and talk about some of these assessments is that they're not designed to describe our brokenness. They're not designed to fix that brokenness, but they're just designed to describe the unique way God has created us and what He has put in us, that once we take care of our brokenness with God through the cross, then He's placed these things. They're not part of our brokenness, and they're part of who God placed us to be. What I'm saying is, if you're an introvert, then that is not brokenness on your part. It's the design God has for you. If you're an extrovert, that is not brokenness on your part. That is how God designed you. If you're an ENTP, that's not brokenness. It's relational and intentional on God's part. If you're a rebel, with quality time as your primary love language, that's not brokenness. That's intentional on God's part. And that's kind of the point here. We are going to look at what our sin nature might cause us to struggle with. But realize that when we allow God to redeem who we are, when we allow Him to redeem and reconcile us to Himself, then there is strength that He has provided through how He has designed us. Does that all make sense? Romans 12, in His grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. And that verse right there, three things just kind of pop out at me. What God gives us is His gift to us. He gives us gifts. And it's not something we earn. It's not something we receive as a reward or a punishment. He's given us a gift. And each of us, it says, He has given us different gifts. Each of us have different gifts. We don't all have all the same gifts. And each of us do certain things well. Certain things. We don't do everything. Some of you have that personality type. Oh, I can do everything well. Okay, fine. Good for you. Some things you do better than others, all right? And it also, he gives us certain things well. Not everything, but not nothing either. He gives each of us those things. So this morning, we're going to look at one more assessment model. And if you didn't get a handout when you came in, you need to grab one now because we're going to walk through this. We're going to look at one more assessment model, which might help you as you think about how God has designed you, and especially as he has designed you to work and to work with others. Paul tells us in Ephesians 4, he makes the whole body fit together perfectly as each part does its own special work. It helps the other parts grow so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. So I'll ask you here, this is the thing we're going to go for. Anybody familiar with this? Six types of working genius. Have you ever heard of that? Well, it's a newer kind of thing. And author Patrick Lencioni and his team kind of developed some of this. And I just wanted to give this to you. It might be helpful for some of you, especially, I said, as you work with others. First, what do we mean by work? When we're talking about work, we've seen it several times in the different verses. Work is purposeful physical or mental effort to achieve a result. A lot of times we think work and we think things I'm paid to do. Well, that can be work. Sometimes you wonder about people you see who are at work and what are they doing? I don't know. But it's effort to achieve a result. You're trying to get something accomplished. So that applies to a lot of different things. Whether it's, you know, it might be a project, it might be assignment, it might be something that you're getting paid to do, it might be paying bills, it might be doing laundry, it might be just something you're volunteering to do. It's something where you're trying to achieve a result. And this kind of assessment, the six types of working genius, is about describing how you get that work done. Because if you think about it, there's a process to getting work done. And as we talk about it, the first component to getting something done or achieving a result is wonder. Wonder. Wonder is where we ask the question, why am I doing this? We ask big questions like, why are we doing it this way? Why is it set up this way? Does this make sense? Does this work? Is there something we're not thinking about? Wonder is that really focusing on the why. Do we know the why? Are we aligned to the why of what we're about to do? And at this stage, we're identifying that there is a problem. Why did I come in this room? Yeah, I heard that. So there is an obstacle to getting things done. So we're looking at the why. The second part of this is invention. Wonder has identified that there's a problem. Invention says, I have an idea. I know how we can do this. I have a way we can get to where we want to go. The inventor comes up with a plan or a solution. It doesn't have to be something that no one has ever thought of. Inventing isn't necessarily something that, you know, has never been done. It's just not being done in this context. It's not being done this way. It may have been something that's been tried before, but we're going back to it. So the inventor is saying, hey, what if we did this? The inventor leans into change. The inventor is kind of a change person. Then there's the discernment. Discernment. Discernment assesses the idea. Discernment evaluates it and provides feedback. Hey, I have an idea. Let's do this. The discerner goes, or the discerner goes, that sounds like it really, you know, that really, yeah, I think that will work. Does it seem like it a good idea? Does it seem like a horrible idea? Is it close to a good idea and just needs some tweaking? If the idea is evaluated as good or close to good, we move to the next step, which is galvanizing. Galvanizing. Someone has to rally the troops. Someone has to get things moving. Somebody has to change the temperature so it's a little cooler in here. Whew. Somebody has to get the ball rolling here. Of course, if someone is galvanizing others to do things, then there have to be other people that are being galvanized. This is where we need enablement. Enablement. Now, most of the time when we hear the word enablement, it's a lot of times in a negative context. It's, you know, you're enabling bad behavior or you're enabling some sort of problem. And it's used in a negative way. But in the area of work, and the way we're using it here, enablement is that agreement to do what is needed to be done. Somebody is saying, hey, let's go. And somebody with enablement's going, yeah, I want to do that. Let me help. How can I help? They may not even ask. They just kind of start doing. Count me in. I'd love to pitch in. The galvanizer says, who's with me? The enabler says, me. Final part of the work, tenacity. Tenacity. Tenacity is the ability to finish. It's the person who sees the project through all the way to the last detail. It's the person who not only sees everything and the events going on, they're the ones going around at the end, picking up the trash, putting things away, making sure everything goes back, okay? The entire task, tenacity, grit, determination, it's all there. So those are the six types of working genius. And you might think, well, I'm no genius, and they certainly are no genius, but what we mean by genius is kind of a remarkable natural ability. Okay. That's, if you look in Webster's, that's part of the definition of genius. A lot of times we just think, you know, mental genius, but as far as this is concerned, for all of us, there's certain parts of this which kind of light us up. Certain parts of us go, yeah, that's, I feel that. And certain parts of this, they go, nope, not me at all. So what makes each of these remarkable is that it's natural to you. It's something that God has created in you, not everybody. No one has all six of these as their genius or as their natural strength. In fact, for each, there's about two, all right? And you have a genius. A genius is something that gives you joy and energy. A genius, that ability where it's so natural to you that you find yourself doing it without even thinking about it. You're coming up with new ideas and everybody else is like stuck and you're going, but we could do that or we could do this. What if we tweaked it this way? For some of you, you're just, you know, you're serving, you're boom, you're there. Other people are just sitting there and you're going, why don't you help? Because don't you see what's going on? Don't you see something has to be done? That's a genius. For instance, nobody asked you to help, but you find yourself right in the middle of it. You might have the genius of enablement. Okay? You might have, maybe you seem to have an idea for a way better things work, and even nobody asked you for a better way. Nobody said, can we do this a better way? But you're thinking of, I got a better way. I want to tinker and improve with this. You might have the genius of invention. On the other end of the spectrum, I'm giving you a spectrum here. We're going to go all the way to the other end. On the other end of the spectrum are our frustrations. Our frustrations. Not only do we get no joy or energy from these tasks, they actually drain the living snot right out of us, okay? These are natural struggle points for you. For instance, maybe it's your job to keep your employees motivated and on the right track. Maybe it's your job to check up on them and keep them moving, and you hate it. It absolutely drains you. I have to go talk to them again. It's not just frustrating because it's them. It's frustrating because you have to do it. You dislike that part of your job. galvanizing might be your frustration. Or maybe you're comfortable in making things happen, but the details. Ugh, details. I don't want to talk about details. Let's get it done, but details. Ugh. Okay. Isn't good enough good enough? Do we have to obsess over every little thing? Okay. Tenacity might be your frustration. Okay. A frustration is not a personal failure in the same way that being an introvert is not a personal failure. It's simply the way you're wired. Sometimes we have to do work that is frustrating to us personally. Sometimes your job requires it. Sometimes being a parent requires it. Sometimes just whatever, you got to do it. But if we always have to do that type of work, oh, just shoot me now, right? That's a frustration. If we're always doing that type of work, or it's not best for us, it's not best for the team, for the people we're working with, it's not best for the people that we're trying to serve. And when I say team, that might be fellow employees, that might be people you serve with at church, it might be your family. And like I said, it includes the people you're trying to serve. In the middle ground between genius and frustration is competency. Competency. Competency, our competencies are those things we can do it for an extended period. They don't frustrate us like that, like frustrations do, but they don't energize us like geniuses do. There's something we can do, fine, it's great. The difference between the three areas of genius and competency and frustration is often illustrated by the example of a hot beverage. A genius is like pouring a hot beverage into a thermos and putting a lid on it. And it stays hot and energized for a long time. And you can, if that's your genius, you can do that and do it. And you know, time passes, you don't even think about it. You're there in the shop and you're creating stuff and you're doing that. It's just, you know, you don't even, it's staying energized. A competency is like pouring a hot beverage into a styrofoam cup with no lid, okay? It's hot, you enjoy it for a while. After a while though, it's like, okay, can we do something else? Because this is, you know, it's kind of draining. The energy goes down. It's good for, well, and then it doesn't. A frustration is like pouring it into a cup. It's like pouring it into a Starbucks cup that has that leak in the bottom. Okay. It drains kind of quickly, loses its heat really quickly, and kind of makes a mess as well. You know, it's just like, okay. That's a frustration. And God has wired us differently. As the verse in Romans says, God has given us the ability to do certain things well, not everything. You don't have six geniuses. You don't even have five. In fact, research and testing indicate that you have two. You have two. Two each, in fact. They've done a lot of research and testing on this. It seems to be two geniuses, two competencies, two frustrations. And if you look on the backside of that sheet, you have of your handout, you have a big chart with a lot of words, okay? And I'm not gonna go and read through all these words. You can read, I hope. But as you go through there, this is kind of a simplified way to look at this. There is a website, workinggenius.com, which I meant to put in your notes and I did not. But this is a simple chart which lists statements with which you agree or disagree. And you can kind of self-assess in each area and see where do I feel like this is more my genius, more my competency, or more my frustration. And where all this takes off is with the work you do with others. When you're all by yourself, you're responsible for everything. And many times, even when we're with other people, sometimes we'll say, well, I'll just do it myself. It's just easier if I do it myself, rather than partner with others because their genius doesn't kind of match up. You know, you're partnered with somebody and they have no tenacity and they're not taking care of details and you're going, I just ought to do this myself because they're not doing it, okay? Not every job needs every genius in the same way. if you've got to get your taxes done, there's probably more tenacity than invention you need there. If you're doing your taxes with a lot of invention, too much invention will get you in trouble. But a team with too little invention and wonder will get stuck in a rut. There's been many examples, companies who, there was one company who was a, their job was software, specifically for kids. And they interviewed all their leadership team. And there was only one person with wonder. And how can you develop software? How can you reach kids if only one person has wonder? All of the rest of them were like doing stuff, but they weren't creating anything new. They weren't asking the right questions. The one person with wonder was their lawyer. So they put them in charge of product development. Okay, makes sense. Likewise, if you have all these ideas and people are willing to execute the ideas, but nobody has discernment, then you're gonna get stuck doing a lot of things, but maybe the wrong thing, because nobody is there discerning what needs to happen. So that's kind of a brief. Any questions on any of this? Maybe too many questions to even ask. Okay, you can see me later if you have any questions on this. As Trudy mentioned last week, there are many shades of green. In fact, the human eye, we're told, can identify up to 10 million different colors. So just because you're an introvert, it doesn't mean your introversion is the same as everyone else's. Just because you're an extrovert doesn't mean your extroversion is the same as everyone else's. We have different personality types, different tendencies, love languages, working geniuses, and that's kind of been the point of walking through all this to see, as we talk a little bit more about introverts and extroverts, there's a lot of flavor to all of that. Ephesians 2 says, "For we are God's masterpiece. He has created us anew in Christ Jesus so we can do the good things he planned for us long ago." And even though we are masterpieces, we are also still works in progress. And so we'll talk more about that.